Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Be sunspots. I swear to God. Welcome.
We're live.
I know. Welcome to live radio. Welcome to another wonderful evening of broadcasting right here on LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block. I am your host with the leastest sitting here, Jim Christina, with looking at my wonderfully quirky co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Bobby Jean.
Hey. And you know, after reading this book, I don't think Albuquerque is quirky.
I know. I would have to agree with you. I'm going, yeah.
I think I need to move.
Oh my God. This book it was something, I have to say.
Yeah, we are eager to get into it.
Well, I don't know that we really want to get into it all that deep. It's actually one of the bloodier books I think I've read in a long time, even one of my own.
Good, but it's
good. Yeah. Richard is back. He will be with us next week. He is just taking this evening off. It's been a rough couple of weeks for Richard, so we welcome you home. Again, our condolences, Rich, and I'm glad you're back safely. And this takes about half the stuff off my plate, so yay. You know, it's almost 7 years of doing this show. We were talking earlier today about the quality of the guests coming on the show now has gotten better and better and better and better. And just saying, wow, you know, are we going to plateau? I don't think so. Mm-mm. I mean, we thought so 4 years ago, and we're still here.
Well, and you know, one thing we were remarking on, I think, last week is how many of the author's books have just been released.
I know.
When we have them on, tonight's no different, and we'll let Mark talk to us about that. But that's so cool.
The only difference is that... he's not a first-time writer.
No. Well, that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, no. As a matter of fact, Mark, his last visit with us was January 7th of this year. He was the first guest in the hood after the new year. And he's back tonight with a brand, oh, my gosh. I just drank a bunch of water. With a brand-new Arthur Nakai novel. Arthur Nakai is a Navajo detective in New Mexico. Well, you know what? Let's just bring him on and let him explain who he is. Please welcome back to the Writer's Block our very good friend and wonderful writer, and I don't know where his ideas come from, but we're going to find out, Mr. Mark Langley. Hey, Mark, what's happening? Well, welcome back. Are you still here?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I think call he might be back, calling Mark. Back in. Wait a minute. He left me a Facebook message. Dropped call. Calling again. Oh, okay.
Call back, Mark. Here he is.
Yeah, you're back now.
Please leave. Kicked him off the call.
It was recording.
Oh, it was a recording.
It was his recording. Do you want to talk a little bit about the book while we wait?
The voicemail of Mark Edward Langley.
Okay.
Do I need to give
Sam the phone number? Oh, here he goes. Here he is. Hi, Mark.
Hey, there we are finally.
Yay!
Okay, well, we were just singing your praises from your last visit, talking about your detective Arthur Nakai, and of course this book, When Silence Screams. Shame on you! Oh my gosh, this book is it's been a while since I've read anything as what do I want to say, Bobby? Riveting, I guess.
Well. And it start. You know how his other two books also, Jim, started like right on.
I mean, right
one, first page one. And first I kind of forgot that about Mark. So I'm reading, and I'm reading, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And Mark, what? We don't know where these ideas come to you, that were quite graphic in this book, but. Not the whole book. And readers are able to take a breath and let the story unfold and enjoy these fabulous characters. And you take us all over New Mexico. And then you throw us again into a really dark place. But what a great read. I read to the last page.
I know it's one of those books that's really, you don't want to read anymore because it makes you so upset, but you can't stop reading it.
Yeah,
it was one of those things that I did so much planning for this and so much research for this. I had to delve into things I never knew about and learned quite a lot of those about some certain things, and tried to, put the certain things in a book that I could use and not be overly graphic. I could have gotten more graphic than it was, but I didn't want to go that route. Sometimes I wanted more likely to lead the reader up to a certain thing and then begin again right after that happened, let their mind fill it in, not blatantly give it to them on the page. They get a sense of what was going to happen, but I took a lot of time reading, a lot of time watching videos of families of girls that had gone missing, and reading stories about them. And it touched me so much that I knew I had to do something about it when I read about it in 2016. And it took all this time to get everything right and get it plotted out the way I wanted to do that. It just turned out this way, and I'm really proud of it.
Well, as well you should be. Now, this book is, without getting really deeply into it, because there's a lot of twists and turns, and there's a lot of things that will give this book away. Although we will say it's primarily about the disappearance of indigenous women in the Southwest. Well, actually, I think probably from Montana straight down to Arizona, if I'm not mistaken, they from the Apache Nation up north, right, where there's a large. Right. And then right, also
reservation in the U.S. and Canada.
Exactly. But also the children, the children that disappear yearly, monthly, weekly off the reservations. Mm-hmm. And nobody knows where. And I was talking to my wife about this earlier, and I have to give you kudos for your take on this whole thing, because my wife's comment was, well, the women that are disappearing, they're nobody. They're people think of them as nobodies, mm-hmm. which is why nobody ever really looks for them or is interested in finding them. And I kind of looked at that and I thought, wow, that probably is partly true, probably more so than not.
It is. Definitely one of those things that a lot of the families go weeks, months, sometimes years, trying to get anything from the police, and I'm sure they're trying, but it's one of those things that there's so much they can't do, or there's so many things they have to deal with, but they don't hear, and they go on and on and on without hearing anything, and then when they call to find out, they don't get any response really as to what they're up to at the moment trying to find them.
Right now, the of course, Bobby G, we're talking today, and she said she's been at a lot of the truck stops and stuff in New Mexico where you base these stories or seem to take place. But she swears up and down she never saw the lot lizards walking from truck to truck. I said, how could you miss them? They're everywhere.
Mark,
they're like ants.
We recently had to take a road trip from New Mexico into California. And we stopped at every Love's that came along and some of the other well-known large, you know, plazas. And I felt as I was reading this book, although I haven't traveled through a lot of the New Mexico that you described, the landscape you described so eloquently, I have been to truck stops. And I've been to some of those restaurants and some of the truck stops, and I will never go to a truck stop with the same frame of mind again.
Oh my.
Well, it's amazing because you start this book out with a bang. Of course, April Mindygoats, is she wakes up and she's, well, I don't want to give spoiler alerts.
But I
have to say, the opening of this book invites you to either read or not read more. It just depends on where your psyche is going to be. But you know, from our previous conversations and from our conversation Tuesday night, I love Arthur Nakai. I think he's just a great character. Yeah. And his wife Sharon is like the best.
Yeah.
She's like the very best. I mean, she, as far as comic relief and kind of lightening things up, she's perfect. She's a perfect foil for Arthur.
And because she's a journalist, she's able to, Mark is able to use her, the author's able to use her as another how he gets information,
right.
Which he always really needs. And she's able to supply some of what he's looking for, right?
Right.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. That's one of the reasons I chose that, because it was based on a woman that was a news anchor here in Chicago, and I got to talk with her several times about, you know, what it's like to have that job, the things you give up to have that job, and the affiliations you can get. So it worked out a lot to have Arthur have that connection to another source of information.
I was telling Jim earlier today, Mark, that I think every man wants to be Arthur and every woman would like to be his partner.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Sharon reminds me so much of Jerry. As a matter of fact, there's a scene in there where she's talking to Arthur on the phone and she goes, "Oh, you mean the pot you cooked in and left on the stove and didn't wash?" And I thought, holy crap, I just heard that yesterday.
Well, he gives us a real married couple, you know.
All I can say is we write what we know.
There you go. I like it. Well, why don't you give our listeners a brief synopsis of this book? I don't want to get too deeply into it because it does have a lot of twists and turns, and there are so many places you can give it away. This book just came out in June.
August.
No, it came out August 31st. August 31st.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. August. Just came out. So why don't you give us a brief synopsis of what's going on? And then I'd like to talk about the disappearance of the indigenous, if you don't mind.
Sure. No, the book is basically about a missing 19-year-old Native Navajo girl, April Mindygoats. Her mother, Melanie, shows up with her son on Arthur's doorstep, asking him to help finding her based on the things he's done before in the previous books that they heard about on the reservation. And in his trials of trying to find out what happened to her, he discovers that she was lured away while her family was during the Indian show in New Mexico in Santa Fe and never seen again. And it's been 6 months now since she was gone. They're not hearing much from the police about what's going on with that. So she comes to him to find out and see if he can find her, bring her back. He delves into some pretty deep things, finding out that she's been sold into trafficking, and then finds out where she is at one point and tries to get in and find her. But then it just, so many things. April has her own ideas of things, and I wanted to make a strong character with her so that it's not some girl of any kind waiting for a man to save her. She's trying to do it on her own. And I think that it works out really well with the other little herrings that are thrown in there and Other Missing Girls, and it works out really well. I just hope that people that read it, a lot of people that have loved it, given it 4 and 5 stars. I'm glad about that. I really appreciate that. So people can stop by a bookstore or go online on Amazon on my website and pick one up and enjoy a good read. But my wife read that because she reads all my stuff first. She told me she laughed and she cried and she was cheering them on, you know. So that's the kind of responses I want to get from the reader that picked up that book. They learn something throughout the book,
right,
about what actually happens like that. But I want them to be like the first two books and just root for the characters and cheer for the characters. I call them people because they're people in my world I create, you know.
Right.
But I hope everyone looks at it and for what it is and learns something while they're entertained.
Well, I just came across something in my brain. It just flipped out. We're going to change now your name to Mark Yellow Pages Langley because you never stop selling. That's great. I love it.
That's a 30-year history of being an automotive aftermarket business.
There you go. You know, let's take a real quick break. Don't go away. And for God's sakes, don't hang up on us again, Mark. We're going to be right.
I don't know how it
drops. Okay. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, the Writer's Block. We will be back with you right after this brief message from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, it seems everyone has a podcast these days, so how about you do this? How about you start your very own radio show that goes out live worldwide for nary a pittance? If you think you have an idea that would translate to a radio talk format, then stop waiting. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Click on the link that says Become a Host. Follow the easy instructions, and before you know it, you'll be the on-air live host of your very own talk show on LA Talk Radio. We have 50-minute slots available every day, including Sundays, so don't be shy. Join the many that have started their careers on the air. Join the hosts on LA Talk Radio at www.latalkradio.com.
And we are back with our guest tonight, Mr. Mark Edward Langley. And if you want to call and talk to Mark, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And, you know, a brief interlude here. Everybody's got a podcast. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of them out there. We go out live, folks. We're live right now. If we make a mistake on the air, you hear it first. Well, actually, we hear it first, but you hear it second. Because there's no turning back. There's no going back. And there's no reduce. So this is live radio, and we love doing live radio, don't we, Bobby?
We do. When I can ask a question, I have one.
Okay, well, then have one.
Mark, there's a red dress on the cover of this book, and there's a comment that Melanie Many Goats makes to Arthur when they're meeting for the first time, and she says, "We ask how many more red dresses will have to hang in the wind before this terror will be over." Do you want to chat a little bit about the color red and the red dress?
Yeah, that's a good question there. The red dress signifies the missing, and it always has for years now. A lot of them, you see posts online and so forth of a lot of red dresses hanging in trees and so forth like that. So I wanted to use that graphic to kind of impress upon people that this is a cause worth fighting for, you know, and it's a symbol of that cause of the missing. I thought about different ways and things to put on the cover. I dealt with my graphic designer on that, and both of us had the same pretty much idea of what to use, and we both came across that, and I wanted to use that. So I wanted to have that symbol out there of what the, you know, what the missing means, that the red dress signifies a missing girl or woman.
Your Arthur Nakai books delve into a lot of the mystical Navajo, from the people themselves, And this one is no different. You get into the mysticism, and not as much as your last book, but you do get into it. And I find it amazing that the way you present it, it's almost like we should have been listening to this all along. It's amazing the spin you put on this Navajo mysticism, and you know, from the Native peoples. And I really, really like that about your books. And I have to say, anybody who reads one of Mark's books is going to get involved in Navajo, and they're going to get involved in mysticism, and they're going to get involved in the language.
And the history.
Right. You know, and the history of the Navajo.
He goes into the 1680 revolt. I mean, we get a nice, you know, and it's not overdone. It's very subtle. And yet a really important part of the characters themselves, as well as the setting that we're in. Really nicely.
Well, you know, I Mark made a comment here just a little bit ago, and I'm paraphrasing you, Mark, but you said, and I consider them people, not characters, because, you know, they're people, they're populating my stories. And I thought, you know, that's really a good way of putting it. That's an excellent way of putting it, actually, because they do become real people when you're writing them, especially ongoing characters like Nakai and his wife Sharon, and the detectives in the Navajo Nation. And I mean, it's just like, wow, I mean, these people become real to you,
mm-hmm.
and to the reader, especially, because they do become real to you. They're so well written, and their dialogue is just unbelievable. And it's just like, I really want Arthur Nakai to be my friend.
Yeah. So do a lot of people, yeah.
You know, but now he's not a cop anymore. He's a PI.
Yeah.
Which is a little surprising, but I think it kind of came up the last time you were on the show. But it came to fruition. Arthur is now a private investigator, licensed private investigator. And he can do things that cops can't. And he does do things that cops can't. I mean, let's face it. But getting into now I have read a lot, and I'm with you on the Native and the indigenous populations of the United States. There have been women missing for hundreds of years. It started back in colonial times, and it continues to this day. And again, it's because people don't think of them as people. They think of them as just, you know, objects. And the women, for any reason, sold off or killed off, or I mean, how many do they found at the bottom of arroyos, and, you know, have been there for 20, 30 years, and they find the skeletons, or they never find anything. And the children get sold off into child slavery, and the child rings that go about and steal children. It's just like it's unconscionable. And you have said, And you have actually hit on this more than any other writer I've talked to, or we have talked to. And I'd kind of like to get your take emotionally, because you do it so well. It's got to bother you emotionally when you write it.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I said I learned a great deal, like I said, about 2016, when 5,712 girls and women went missing. When people go missing, some get found, you know, right away or in a week or two. Some never get found. Some get found, unfortunately, murdered in some way, boyfriend, ex-husband, whatever it may be. But when I read the number, that startled me at first, because it was so many in 1 year. That's the U.S. and Canada put together. And then when I went on to Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women website, and I found all the flyers they have of all these girls and women that have gone missing, I printed them out the year I started looking into this. And when I got all the flyers printed out to look at, so I knew how the flyer would be, you know, based and how it looked, but it put a face and a name to the number. Because when something is just a number, it's easy to pass over. But when you can put a face and a name and an age and whatever hair color, eye color it may be, to that number, it stops being a number. It's a real person. These people are real mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about it, like this girl that's gone missing. Now they found in Wyoming up there, you know, made national news. This kind of thing out here in New Mexico, Arizona, doesn't make national news. It people in that area know about it, but it doesn't get talked about.
Right.
And that's one of the things that struck me, and I wanted to bring light, I guess, or make bring awareness of some kind to this plight that's been going on for so long. Mm-hmm. That never gets really any airplay. It doesn't get any on the radio, TV, whatever, you know. But like one of my characters, you know, says in the book there that when it's a white girl going missing on a golf course, everybody hears about it. When it's
a hundred people
in a 6 month period out here, nobody hears about it.
Right. That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Bobby?
This afternoon while I was going through the book again and taking some notes and such, Mark, suddenly my phone gave me an Amber Alert. And I, you know, we get those pretty regularly. And as I was reading the description, I thought, you know, this is not a Native American woman. And I wondered if, and maybe you don't know, but does the Amber Alert system, is it available to let us know when a Native American woman is missing?
I'm not sure. I would hope that it would be for out in the areas where they're located with this. You know, I would hope the police or somebody has a way of using that along with that to get the word out about things. I still get, you know, missing flyers across my phone almost daily about girls that have gone missing that day or day before, you know. So it's one of those things that always pops up on my phone. But I would hope the Amber Alert system works for them as well. It should, because they're citizens of this country too. So it has to work for everybody, but it doesn't work for anybody. So it has to work for us all.
Mm-hmm.
There was another thing, and then I'll turn that back over to Jim, that I found really shocking. I was on one of your two Facebook pages today, and I saw different posts that you had done or others had done that have been banned by Facebook. It made no sense to me. And, you know, we've never talked about this before on our show, Jim. We've never, I was really, really surprised. And I wondered what your take is on that.
First, I get upset when I see it. It's happened a couple of times within the last week that I did a book signing last Saturday and at a store, local store. And I went back on after that, like on Monday, we'll say, to thank them for having me out there. You know, it was a great time being there, signing books, meeting people and so forth. And they blocked it and removed it for spam under that guise and saying I was trying to get fake likes and so forth. They go, first of all, what is a fake like? You know, I mean,
I know.
Wow.
If somebody has an account and they like it, how is that a fake like? What am I trying to get fake likes? I'm putting things out there to thank them for having me. Is that wrong? I mean, this censorship issue is getting to be just absolutely crazy. And it's, you know, Facebook is one of those double-edged swords you have to have to be out there, you know, but they need to stop policing the world.
Well, you know, and Facebook is like they allow all these other ads to show up on your page, you know, ads to say chosen just for you. When I could care less, so I click them all irrelevant, and you know, don't ever want to see these again. I go through every day and get out 30 of them. I just knock them out, but they don't stop those.
Mm-hmm.
They stop the ones that
they stop
actually
this.
Have relevance, you know,
right? Something like this. Yeah.
Mark, you almost alluded in your book, almost alluded. You didn't quite make it, or I think possibly you stopped short on purpose. But the major reservations from the Dakotas and the large Sioux reservation into Montana, down through New Mexico, Utah, Arizona, they're almost like hunting grounds for predators.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of wonder if you stopped short on purpose, or if you what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I do see posts from I have many Navajo friends on Facebook and Instagram and so forth out there, And I do see posts from them when they're driving along and they see this mysterious unmarked white van driving down the dirt road, you know, and they follow them for a while, try to get license numbers and so forth, or tag numbers on the vehicle and things like that nature, you know. But it does. It happens on all the reservations. It's
right.
Just a Southwestern thing, you know. And it's one of those things I kind of alluded to give people the idea it happens all over. It doesn't just happen in one area.
Exactly.
And it's an all over thing. But again, it's out there essentially in an open area where hardly anybody is. It's all spaced out. Anything can happen anywhere. Some kid could be riding their bicycle down around there. Somebody pull up in a van or a truck, you know, and boom, they're gone.
Right. Right.
And kids don't know. No matter how many things you talk about to them or try to get them to understand, it's not going to happen to me.
Well, that's true. I mean, years ago, we used to work with Nestle, and we used to give talks at high schools and junior highs and elementary schools about their fundraising programs. And the talks always included, you know, no matter how big and bad you think you are, there's always somebody bigger and badder than you are. You know, so always be cognizant of where you are and what you're doing. But young people today don't seem to get that message. Because they don't get that message, white van comes by and boom, bye-bye girl.
Yeah, and like in this case in the book, you know, April gets onto a profile online that she's been talking to, gets lured away by this person who claims to be this person online, and they're not. That happens daily.
Right.
I mean, I did a lot of research on that, too. That kind of thing happens, and the way they do these things happens all the time. And kids get so caught up in this because, oh, it's somebody liking me. It's somebody, you know, oh, promising this and that and so forth, you know. But there is danger out there. It's not, you know, something that, you know, it's you have to think about 100% of the time, but they need to be aware of what goes on online.
Right.
And that's just the way I chose to start this story that way, because it's more relevant, I think, to a lot of people that may end up starting like that.
Right. Right. Now, April is in the opening of this book, realizes that this is something that she's not going to be paid for. Because she, of course, as she alludes right in the first paragraph, she is a prostitute, and she's not going to get paid for it, and she doesn't think she's going to get out of here. And it's like the feeling of absolute helplessness must be just tantamount to terror, sheer terror. We're going to take another real quick break, and we'll be back with you in just a minute. Don't go away, please. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. And we'll be back to you right after this brief word from Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published, and right now we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back with our guest, Mr. Mark Edward Langley, and we're talking about his book, When Silence Screams. It's a page burner. I won't even say turner. It's a burner. It is absolutely one of the best books I think I've read. Well, next to FBI last week. One of the best books I've read this year. I don't know if you listened to last week's show, Mark, but we had an ex-FBI agent on with us. Oh, my God, she was hilarious. She was really a good guest.
I kept thinking while I'm reading this book, and where's the FBI?
Yeah, where's the FBI in all of this? There is a movie, I was telling Bobby Jean, there is a movie we just saw for the second time now. First time was in the theaters. It's called Wind River. I don't know if you know of it.
But I own a copy of it, yeah.
So you know it deals with the indigenous missing women. And that's the end. Thousands and thousands of women go missing every year, and nobody cares. And that is so sad. It is absolutely so sad because, as you point out so adroitly, they are people.
Well, and they're also, Jim, as you and I were talking again this afternoon, they're all young women. These are women that would go on to have families, you know, maybe, or be work, you know, their lives are cut short, and they can't continue in family traditions if that's a choice they would have made. The culture is losing a lot of the members that would keep the culture moving forward.
Well, you know, as Mark says in his book, the levels of poverty are so bad, especially on the Navajo reservations, that a lot of these people don't live very long to start with. You know, and so disappearing or not disappearing is guess they consider it part of life, maybe. I don't know. But it certainly isn't to me. And to most of the readers that are going to read this book will think the same way as we do. I mean, you know, Bobby and I are pretty smart people. Bobby is a smart person. But you know, we kind of get it. You know, we're not dummies. We get it. Every book that you write, they find them better and better, and more information and more information and more caring that you put into your stories is phenomenal. And I have to say, I would highly, highly recommend this book be on everybody's bookshelf, if for no other reason, to make them aware of the ongoing problem of disappearing women in the nations. It's atrocious, and it should never have happened to start with. Now I'm going to ask you the question. We asked you about this before, but I'm going to guess that you're going to have a different answer this time because of the storyline on this book. Did you have, if you had writer's block on this particular book that you wrote, and if you did, how did you get over it? Because it seems to me that it would have been rather difficult.
Well, you know, it's amazing. On this one, I didn't. I had everything planned out. I had each chapter planned out as far as I was going to be, how it was going to go. I did not have any section where I was having writer's block. The current number, the book number four, I am right now a little bit. I'm writing number four and five now, too. But I didn't have it on that because I was so well planned out and well thought out. I knew where I was going. I knew how I was going to get there. The only thing that changed, like I always tell people, is during either dialogue in the book, the characters sometimes take over. So the people are they have their own personalities, their ideas, and their thoughts. And as I'm writing it, you know, I see the conversation in my head where they're sitting talking, doing something or whatever. And they always kind of tend to get off the path I have set and go somewhere else I didn't think of. And it leads to more of a realistic conversation. So that worked out really well. Like I said, I'm having a little bit of writer's block on book four and five. I know where I'm going. I had to get there for one thing. But I was pretty well mapped out with this book here. And I just kept going and going and going and going. And pretty much it got done. And then I got into the rest of the process of getting it edited and graphic designed and then ready to go. So that worked out really well. I think because I was so prepared, that's why I didn't have any writer's block with this, because it, when you're prepared like that, it just seems to flow through. I need to get better prepared for books four and five.
Okay. I'm right in the middle of writing two right now, the same as you. But I'm also editing some books, and I've got a brand new writer that's on board with this. And I wonder what advice you would give to a brand new writer. The advice that I gave this guy, his name is James Webb. His story is good, but being a new writer, he uses entirely too many words, and tries to be too descriptive when fewer words would be more descriptive. I kind of wonder what advice you would give a new writer along those lines.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, there is. I learned a great deal before I did the first book, getting edited with that editor there. But as far as description goes, you don't want to be, if you're describing a setting in an area or traveling somewhere, you don't want to be like a travelogue. You don't want to be describing everything you see on the road going down somewhere. It's better to say he angled west and went south and such and such to get there quickly and keep the story moving, you know. There is that. That was a trouble of mine in the first book a little bit. And you just don't need to be travelogue-y with describing too much. Short descriptive sentences pretty much will get the reader where you want them to go. And it just, I think it alleviates a lot of this baggage that you might read through going down the road somewhere or getting some situation handled.
Right. I absolutely agree with that. I just actually, if you don't mind, I just actually wrote a paragraph. I love this paragraph only because it's not real wordy, but it's kind of just very descriptive. And it's about a girl that's clinging to her mother. And it says, the third child, a girl, Miranda, clung to her mother like a piece of gossamer drift, lighting on a skirt, defying gravity and its ability to cling on a surface. At 4 years of age, Miranda was developing a beauty all her own, mirroring her mother with no hint of family Thatcher resemblance in sight. So that was what I just said. Okay, here she is, hanging onto her mom like a piece of spider web. That's not going to let go.
Yep. Very good.
And it's just, I mean, it's short, sweet, it's to the point. And it's kind of like what I did with James's first paragraph. I really shortened it down, took out a lot of words. And I sent it to him, and I says, okay, yay or nay, if you like what I've done, then I'm going to continue. And he goes, oh, yes, please, please, please. Okay.
Well, it's the old adage, less is more, you know.
Exactly. And a lot of new writers don't get that.
We all can't be as widely descriptive as Hemingway, you know, and that tends to go down the road a while, you know.
Or Tolstoy or Dostoevsky, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things involved in that. But I read somewhere in one of the books about writing a long time ago is that, you know, write your first chapter and then go back and throw out the entire first paragraph.
Exactly.
And give it the second one. You know.
Exactly. I would agree with that.
One of the writing books, yeah.
I would agree with that. Well, you know, we're kind of running out of time here, Mark, and I'm sorry you couldn't join us face to face, but at least we got your voice.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. And okay, now you need to let us know when number four comes out, because we're going to have you back.
Well, good. But I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
You need to get your Skype fixed.
You know, I think what had happened was I did 5 updates from Microsoft, and somehow it wiped out what I had in there. And
Microsoft does that. They do
crazy.
It.
I hate
when Microsoft says I have an update. I say no.
You don't want to know the words I was saying over here, unless I.
No, and Microsoft sends you an email saying we have an update for you. No. Don't think so, because you'll break it.
Hey, my last laptop was running so slow. The guy from Dell told me if you get anything saying to download any, you know, certain two things, don't do it anymore.
Right,
Right. It'll slow you down further.
Well, I have a little Acer Chromebook that I use like late at night and, or, you know, to kind of write notes and stuff on. And it's no longer supported, and its operating system has disappeared. You know, and so I tried to download the fix. I got it, put it on the thing, put it in there. Nope. It's no longer supported. We can't
pen
fix
and
it anymore.
Pen and paper work really good.
I'm sorry?
Pen and paper work really well.
Well, I know, but I'm lazy. Come on, Bobby, I'm Italian. I don't, you know. I eat olives and pasta. Huh? Go ahead, Mark.
My other laptop was the one that slowed down so much. I confiscated my wife's, and I'm using hers.
Ah, well, Control Alternate Delete, where you bring up the, and you go in and you go into startup, and I just won't let anything start up now besides basic, and it just really sped up my laptop a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Great.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, Mark. I it's always a pleasure having you with us. And gee, don't let it be another 7 months, huh? Sorry.
Well, it takes a while to get the book done and everything going. You know, yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me back. I love coming back and talking to both of you. I really enjoy being here.
Yeah, well, like I said, don't let it be another 9 months. I mean, come on, you know.
Well, I'll try to schedule earlier then, you know, yeah.
Well, it's gonna be later than that now, because we are like booking now into February. So, unfortunately. Okay, buddy, thanks for joining us. This is Mark Langley. You can find his book, When Silence Screams, on Amazon, online booksellers. Please, please, please pick up a copy. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee you, unless you have, you know, real gentle sensibilities. Then you may not like it, but
well, you learn how to flip through those pages.
Well, yeah, but
you can just flip through those pages.
Yeah, but
they are
germane to the story.
They are. But you can, you know, read it enough to get the, you know, and then you can, because the story is so important and the story is so well written.
Right.
You need to have it.
Subject matter is very, very important.
Yeah.
So you don't want to lose that. Mark, again, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be talking soon, my brother.
Sounds good. They can also go to my website, markedwardlangley.com, and get an autographed copy.
You got it. Thank you so much. Next week, we have the daughter-in-law of H.R. Haldeman. Aha! Heather Haldeman. She's married to H.R. Haldeman's oldest son, Hank. And she's writes about growing up in Hollywood. And in the upper reaches of Pasadena and that area up there, and what it was like with her father and growing up a rich kid. This ought to be interesting, interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. I believe Jerry will be sending you the book this week.
Okay.
And you should be sending Richard as well. And until that time, by golly, thank you so much for joining us. We, like I said, we love going out live. This is the only way to be. Bobby, great talking to you always. Hang on. And for Bobby Jean, of course, her husband Jim, and Jerry, the bookie, of which we could not do the show without, Sam Hassan, myself, and Richard Paulinelli, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Paulinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.